morning. Thank you, everyone, for being here, and welcome to the May 16th meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation. We have a few bills. We have two bills that we're going to have public hearings on tonight, and we're also going to have an information session on an update for the Department of Revenue regarding the marijuana tax revenue and the plans for disbursement of that. We're going to start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 307. I'll ask Adam Crawford to give a quick orientation and then invite Mark Mayer forward to describe the bill a little bit more, and follow up with asking Senator Steiner Hayward to come forward when you're ready and as part of the first panel of testimony. And I know some people may be coming in and out during these proceedings, so if you need to come in or depart early or both, feel free. Mr. Crawford, why don't you start, and then Mr. Mayer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 307 comes before you. The committee is being asked to consider the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments replace the measure. They allow social consumption of marijuana at venues in public view if specific conditions are met, including OLCC licensure, prohibits the OLCC from awarding a license to a venue for social consumption of marijuana if a governing body of a city or county has not specifically allowed the consumption of marijuana items at licensed venues, provides technical amendments to marijuana statutes, and takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment.
All right.
Chair Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I've been asked to come forward to testify as to the content of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 307, how they differ from the introduced version, and I'll try to be as brief as possible. The Senate Bill 307 is introduced, created two license types for what is commonly referred to as social consumption of cannabis. Underneath one license type, a person could apply to host a temporary event, and underneath the other, a person could apply to have a cannabis lounge, if you will, or an indoor location where cannabis could be consumed socially. These provisions both allowed for indoor consumption so long as they met requirements that are very similar to those requirements set forth in the Indoor Clean Air Act for smoke shops. Two major changes occurred in the Dash 1s. First, temporary events have been removed from the bill, so they are no longer a license type underneath the Dash 1s. Secondly, underneath the Dash 1s, indoor consumption would not be allowed, so it would only be outdoor consumption, and the idea is that there would be a porch or patio area or some other place immediately adjacent to one of these locations that would allow for the social consumption. The Dash 1s base the license type primarily off of a marijuana retailer for locational requirements, including the school requirement of being not within 1,000 feet of a school. And then for the purpose of regulating the actual consumption, they include five special requirements, which I'll go over very briefly. They are on pages 2 and 3 of the Dash 1 amendments, subsection 3C through subsection 3EF, excuse me. This first special requirement is that if there's going to be any marijuana sold at one of these premises, it has to be sold by a marijuana retailer. So you would have to be doubly licensed to both have social consumption and sell. Secondly, the commission is going to be required to allow consumption of marijuana items in designated places. Thirdly, there's going to be a specific prohibition against the consumption of marijuana items in public places as defined in the Indoor Clean Air Act, except as allowed underneath the Indoor Clean Air Act. So nothing that conflicts with the specific requirements of the Indoor Clean Air Act can be allowed as one of these license types. Fourthly, there must be a prohibition against the consumption of items that are alcoholic beverages, tobacco products, or that are not inhalants. So edibles would not be allowed at one of these establishments. It would be only things that could be smoked or vaped. And then finally, actually that is it, I believe, for the special requirements. Finally, Section 4, just real quickly, I think this is important, is that this is an opt-in. Counties and cities have to affirmatively pass an ordinance allowing one of these license types to be located in the city or county. And then I regret to inform the committee that in Section 5, there's a fairly complicated technical glitch that I have created and I will need to fix, even if there are no other requested amendments. So I apologize for that.
That's all right. Thank you. You've done a lot of great work on this. Do committee members have any comments, Senator Perillo?
Madam Chair, I drew the short straw on the Social Cannabis Consumption Working Group as an assignment. We convened about three meetings. The product that you see is a product of a work group that worked very hard to come to an agreeable middle ground on the topic of social consumption for cannabis. There are, in addition to the features that were mentioned by our legal counsel, this is an opt-in. So only venues that specifically ask for the permission can do so. There are two licenses required. People wish to do this. One's for consumption, the other is for sale. If you were looking for an analogy, you'd look at smoking patios that are allowed for tobacco consumption. There are strict limitations on the forms of cannabis that can be consumed. The venues are subject to time, place, and manner, as it would be. They have to be at least 1,000 feet away from school, for instance. Alcohol and tobacco use are not permitted on the premises. The need essentially was driven by the idea that there are many people who cannot consume at home, and that we do not wish them to consume in public. And so the logical takeaway is that you have to provide a venue. And this is an attempt at providing, a limited attempt at providing that venue. And this is a kind of a baby step forward in the social consumption conundrum. So we commend it to your consideration.
Thank you so much. Any other questions for our panel? Yes, Rep. Fahey.
I'm not sure there's a question for the thank you.
Or any other comments?
Can you talk a little bit about the conversation about edibles? And
sure. If you are looking at consistency of usage, edibles are a mystery to many of the folks that might be engaged in this venue. The effect on people at time, the potency, are all issues that are very hard to train for. So we concentrated only on vapors or inhalables. We didn't want to get into dabs or cookies or anything that might be deliverable in a quantity that would produce an inconsistent effect on users. So we stuck with what we thought was the thing that people would have most experience with, both licensees and users.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments, Representative Wilson?
Madam Co-Chair, thank you. If I could address the Senator, in the collective mind's eye of the work group, what did the like the patio facility look like? Would it look like something that's done at Magoo's, for instance, with enclosure and all that? So people aren't huddled together in the wintertime.
Yeah, actually, we had a very interesting architectural discussion about whether three walls is an enclosure. So we did envision it looking not much different than a smoking patio that you would find that is legal under the Indoor Clean Air Act, because it is outdoors. But it is not a venue that would allow for easy viewing from the public. As a matter of fact, consumption could not be viewable by the members of the public. So it is screened, but it is configured so that there is more than adequate ventilation. I hope that's a general enough description, but gives you the idea.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I want to thank everyone who participated in this work group, and Senator Farrelly and his staff person who did some good relaying of information for everyone and convening. I participated in the work group and think it would be great for us to get to a social consumption outcome that people can, that people on all sides of the issue or with all levels of comfort with this newly legal product can accept. And I think we intentionally worked to try to make this as modest a step forward as we could to try to make it as comfortable for as many people as possible. So now we have testimony from quite a number of people signed up. It looks like we have a lot of testimony in favor. And some neutral and a couple people testifying against. So it'll be interesting to hear next steps. I'm going to invite forward a panel of three people. I'm going to invite forward a panel of three people, including Senator Steiner Hayward and Sam Chapman and Sara Batterby, to have you present. And Senator Steiner Hayward, I know you have other commitments, so if you need to go right after you testify, feel free to do that. But please, folks, welcome. State your name for the record before you begin. We'll start with Senator Steiner Hayward, and then you can continue in any order. We're glad you could be here. And then next up we have Mike Brocklin, Jennifer Vines, and Trevor Belts. Please.
This is less difficult.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate District 17, Northwest Portland and Beaverton. I'm honored to have the opportunity to testify in support of the general principles underlying Senate Bill 307. I'll leave the particulars to get sorted out. I want to point out that I was one of the earliest public legislative supporters of Measure 91, which legalized recreational cannabis in the state of Oregon, because I believe that it's no more addictive or dangerous than alcohol, possibly less so, and certainly less addictive than nicotine, both of which are already legal substances. I also knew that although we had decriminalized cannabis in this state, we were still seeing kids unduly penalized for this in ways that they weren't being penalized for alcohol, which is actually probably more dangerous for them. So I thought it was very important to do that. Since that time, this committee, many of whom you have served on this committee for several years now, has done remarkable work at implementing statutory support for this measure in ways that have allowed us to proceed forward in a very thoughtful, methodical way. And this is the logical next step, to provide a venue for social consumption of cannabis. In particular, I want to point out two reasons that I support this. The first has to do with racial discrimination. We know that prior to legalization of recreational cannabis in all the states that have done it, people of color were disproportionately affected by police interactions around cannabis use, and the data are very clear about this. Now, data from Seattle and Denver show that this is still true even after legalization, and it's really important for us to make sure that communities of color are not unduly stigmatized or punished for something that is completely legal in this state. And providing a place for social consumption will allow them to do people, anybody to do so in a legally approved venue with friends in ways that are safe and that are not subject to law enforcement scrutiny, as long as they're following all the rules that Mr. Mayor carefully outlined. The second reason is that it's important for our tourist economy, to be honest. We know that people who come to Oregon to visit, we have a robust tourist economy in this state, and some people want to enjoy the use of recreational cannabis while they're here, which is a perfectly reasonable thing for them to do. However, since they're likely staying in a hotel or an Airbnb or someplace other than a private home where they could use cannabis legally, they're not allowed to. There's no legal place for them to use cannabis. So providing an area for an ability to use it socially, for social public consumption, as it were, of cannabis would be an important aspect of tourism here in Oregon. We are known, frankly, as the best producers of cannabis in the country, certainly, and potentially some of the world, and we ought to take advantage of that with our tourism industry and make it available to people who visit our state for its many agricultural treasures, wine, beer, cannabis, and our beautiful sites and our culture and restaurants. So having this opportunity to move forward in these very modest steps, as you've outlined, would provide a really important opportunity for economic development and social justice. And I urge your support for some modest steps forward to allow this to happen.
Excellent.
Happy to take any questions. And as you said, Madam Chair, I apologize, but I am supposed to be in another meeting. But I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions for the senator? All right.
Thank you so much. And I apologize for having
not at all.
Here.
Thank you. We appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Mr. Chapman.
Hi. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sam Chapman. Oregon law allows for adults to legally purchase and consume cannabis products, provided that they do so in the privacy of their own home. In reality, however, this restriction has made the legal consumption of cannabis impossible for many Oregonians who do not own their own primary residence, live with small children, or those who live in government housing. As a result, many otherwise responsible adults are left to no choice but to smoke or vaporize cannabis in public, on sidewalks, in parks, in their cars, etc. Senate Bill 307 would create a framework for the OLCC to create and enforce regulations for the cannabis consumption, lounges, and temporary event licenses, subject to approval by local governments, as was mentioned by Legislative Council. Coupled with this fact that the bill does not have any type of specific emergency clauses around the implementation, on top of the fact that localities can take time to work with stakeholders to figure out these time, place, and manner regulations. I do feel like there is a lot to be said about the incrementalism of this bill. Senate Bill 307 would create safe, legal, regulated spaces for adults to consume cannabis while sending a clear message to children that, like alcohol, cannabis consumption is an adult activity to be taken seriously. Far from being an obstacle to public health or safety, Senate Bill 307 will be a clear improvement over the status quo for all Oregonians, regardless of their cannabis use. We encourage the committee to consider the ways in which Senate Bill 307 provides avenues for sensible collaboration between the public health community, the OLCC, local governments, and Oregon's emerging cannabis industry. I would like to end in saying that I do reluctantly support the Dash 1 amendment and would hope that there would be further consideration of potentially adding temporary event licenses back into that Dash amendment if there is a new one. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your very important work on this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for your work on this. Ms. Batterby.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much for having me and for your tireless work on this subject. I know it's been a year or so since I was here last time, but specifically related to this bill, as I'm Sarah Batterby. I'm the CEO of Hi-Fi Farms. We're a craft cannabis cultivation business in Hillsboro, Oregon. We've really taken it upon ourselves to set a gold standard for the development of a craft industry around cannabis that really represents small farmers using organic and sustainable methods to produce the very, very highest quality products in the country. And one of the reasons that I think we do this is because I think it's inherent to the culture of Oregon to approach craft and certain areas of our industry this way. But I think it's the right thing to do. But we've also done it because we see it as an opportunity to have Oregon be represented and competitive as a national brand at some point in the future, and for Oregon to attract people from all over the country to experience our products and the way that we create them. We've made significant investments in building this industry and participating as good citizens in the Oregon economy with the understanding that we would incrementally move towards rules that allowed us to share our craft and our products with people in a sensible way that conforms to the priorities of the Cole Memorandum and the stated priorities of this committee and also the OLCC. So I feel delighted that we are looking at this possibility of an incremental step forward. I share Sam's perspective on the fact that, you know, we would like to see more, but we understand the need for a compromise in this process, and I would very much like to see this progress. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you. And I'm realizing that we probably need to move to you. Thanks. We probably need to move to 3 minutes per person testimony, which is about the amount of time everyone's taken so far. But in order to get through as many witnesses for our couple of hearings today as possible, we'll move to that. And again, Mike Rockland, Jennifer Vines, and Trevor Belt are up next. And then following those three, we have Paul Cosgrove, Katrina Hedberg, and Stacy Michelson, please. You can proceed in any order. Please start by stating your name for the record.
Sorry. For the record, my name is Trevor Belts with the Oregon Medical Association. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify in front of you. The Oregon Medical Association represents over 8,500 physicians and physician assistants in Oregon, and we are concerned about the negative impacts of Senate Bill 307 and the Dash 1 amendments, which will have on the Oregon citizens and the state's Indoor Clean Air Act. The Indoor Clean Air Act protects the public, venue patrons, and employees from risks associated with exposure to secondhand smoke. Exemptions to the Indoor Clean Air Act, as contained in Senate Bill 307 for marijuana, will expose Oregonians to secondhand marijuana smoke. While marijuana smoke is different from tobacco, there is no safe level of exposure to any kind of secondhand smoke. A clinical guidelines work group, which was established through House Bill 4014 from last session, strongly opposed smoking marijuana as a method of delivery because of, and I quote, harms associated with inhaling any kind of smoke. As a member of the Children's Health and Marijuana Coalition, the Oregon Medical Association is committed to ensuring the protection of Oregon's children and youth from exposure to marijuana. Evidence shows that exposure to marijuana in early adolescence puts youth at greater risk of addiction and may reduce cognitive functions. Normalizing the use of marijuana through social consumption sends the wrong message to our youth and increases the likelihood that they will seek out marijuana. We appreciate the ability to participate in this bill's work group process and strongly believe there is more work to be done on the regulatory side. The OMA would support looking at social consumption spaces through a task force process to ensure all aspects of implementation are fully addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to note that my understanding is that the Dash 1, and I understand that you and your association may oppose the idea of a social consumption venue, and that is a perfectly legitimate perspective. But I think the Dash 1 would not entail a carve-out from the Indoor Clean Air Act. I think it was specifically crafted so as to not entail a carve-out. So just want to get that on the record. If anyone is considering testifying that the Dash 1 would involve a carve-out from the Indoor Clean Air Act, just want to be clear, I believe that that is not the case. But thank you so much. All right, whomever would like to go next, please proceed.
If I may. Great. Good evening, co-chairs, members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Dr. Jennifer Vines. I'm a public health physician and trained in primary care. I'm the deputy health officer for Multnomah County Health Department, and I'm here to represent Multnomah County in opposition to Senate Bill 307 and the Dash 1 amendment. I want to touch on three points. The first is specifically with respect to the Dash 1 and confusion on our part, because Section 2.3d does not make clear that designated areas for inhalant use must be in compliance with the Indoor Clean Air Act. And Section 2.3e uses the definition of public places from ORS 433.835, which we interpret as allowing indoor consumption in locations that are called private clubs or private events. It's unclear to us what additional responsibilities would fall to our county related to enforcement of smoke-free laws. So, for example, responsibility for responding to complaints fall to county staff responsible for enforcing the Indoor Clean Air Act. What additional resources would be necessary to allow for that piece of work? And these are just some of the questions that we believe should be addressed by a group of stakeholders as described in Senate Bill 308. The next piece I want to touch on is secondhand smoke. And again, as a primary care physician and public health physician, I would be remiss in not reminding you of the harms of inhaling combustible tobacco products. And I'd like you to know that the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers added marijuana smoke to their definition of environmental tobacco smoke and state that there is no ventilation system that can eliminate it. Finally, our kids are watching. Our concern is that the normalization of smoking when it is allowed in public erodes the decades of work that we've done in public health to roll back the social norms around tobacco and smoking products. In 2012, the Surgeon General called on local governments to put in place policies that create environments that encourage and support a smoke-free life to protect the young. So thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you so much.
Good evening. Co-chairs, joint committee members. Mike Rockland, for the record. My name is Mike Rockland. I've been a public health advocate for years. I've appeared before the committee many times. And today I want to address a couple points that we've heard the panel talk about. Number one, the science. We have a lot of science behind the Indoor Clean Air Act regarding tobacco because that has been well established. We don't for cannabis. because of the science being prohibited, basically. So we need to collect that data going forward. I would like to see that being done. That would be really kind of the basis for one of the pieces of the Cannabis Commission. A little plug there. Second thing is I've had a lot of experience with OSHA, and OSHA does protect workers from secondhand smoke and things like that. We have not found enough even anecdotal evidence to think that it's secondary exposure, if you will, from cannabinoids. A little different type of exposure, except in an extremely enclosed space. So that's another study piece that needs to be done. And finally, I think the whole issue on originally the act, which enforcement was the key, is the science is needing. I agree with the physicians that are here speaking about that. We do need more factual data, and the research behind that's pending. So social is the operative word, and that's what we're talking about. People have been, we have had Northwest Cannabis Club and Madeline's world famous cannabis cafe and other locations, and last year where there actually was in Portland an outdoor venue, the Summer Fair, that have proven successful. So I'd like to take that as a baseline, if you will, to look at. And this is an ideal. As a nurse, I'm really excited to think that we can actually educate groups in a safe setting, and that's what this is about. So I would encourage you to pass what I consider to be a first step to collect that data and then to look at it and see how it works. And finally, I want to add one more thing. Smoking's outdoors, so it really doesn't affect ASHRAE ventilation or anything else. This is a totally different idea than what we come up with originally. So as far as a first step, I think it's very laudable. A lot of work has been done, Senator Ferrioli and the task force, and I really do want to encourage people to try this out and measure it and see where we get with it, and then have stakeholders contribute to look at this and see how we can either take it forward or do something else with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Senator Pozanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess it's really for the OMA and for Dr. for yourself. Both of your comments seem to be really focused on what I consider the main bill. I know you said also to the Dash Ones, but we've heard what the Dash Ones actually provide for. It's outdoors, it's screened from the public, there's a limitation and a prohibition of children even being present, and so I'm trying to capture that part. And I guess what I'd like for y'all to do, if you can respond now, great. If not, then I'd like to have it in writing as to how your concerns that you've raised regarding what I would consider the main bill that could have been inside with secondhand smoke and potential other attributes. But I'm still trying to figure out how that really fits in for the Dash Ones.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Co-chairs and Senator Pozanski, I think from the OMA's perspective, big portion of the concern is still around the normalization of marijuana, and again doing the work to ensure that we're educating our children and adolescents in the right way. The Dash Ones do have the distance requirements away from schools and that sort of thing, but I think that there's still concern around children and adolescents walking around the venue. I mean, being close to it, I think there's still concern with secondhand smoke to the area.
Do you have a follow-up? Or you
well, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it doesn't make any sense scientifically where it's secondhand smoke and then the part about children lurking around these premises and all that. I'm sorry. It seems a little purist as to a perspective of what I think this task force has addressed those issues, but it seems like even though they've addressed them, I'll just stop.
All right. Thanks. Any other comments? Okay. Thank you so much, panel. Next up, we have Paul Cosgrove, Katrina Hedberg, and Stacey Michelson, please. Okay. And then after that, we're going to have Christine Lewis, Burke Nelson, and Brandon Goldner, please.
Co-chairs Burdick and Leininger, and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the state health officer and state epidemiologist for the public health division of the Oregon Health Authority. And I'm here to provide information related to the Dash 1 amendments of Senate Bill 307. And I actually wanted to talk about a couple of things. One is related to the smoking of marijuana and what we know about the science. And the other has to do with the social norms. So I think, you know, a lot of people say that marijuana smoke is something somehow different than tobacco smoke, but it's really inhaling any particulate matter is not good for health. The science is emerging. The National Academies of Sciences recently produced this document that we were part sponsors of, The Health Effects of Cannabis and Cannabinoids. And we actually have in Oregon a retail science advisory committee that looks at what's known about the data and what recommendations we would make. And basically, when it comes to smoking cannabis, we know directly that the effects on lung function are very similar to that of smoking tobacco. And there is no safe level, including of secondhand smoke, regardless of what the source of that is. The second issue that I wanted to bring up or to mention really had to do, again, with the social norms. We certainly know, just as an example, when it comes to social norms around smoking, that those communities that have hookah lounges have a higher prevalence of smoking among youth than do those communities where hookah lounges are not allowed. So again, the social norming does affect youth, and of course the retail marijuana sales in Oregon are prohibited for folks under age or the youth under age 21. So we're very concerned about that. Now, I also understand that when people talk about smoking on a patio that is out of view, clearly marijuana smoke is quite pungent and people can smell as well. So depending on where this is and where these the patios might be, there's certainly youth would understand that smoking was going on there. One other question that was raised for the previous panel had to do with how we would define a smoking patio. And again, even though these are outdoors, currently this defines this as three walls. And again, there's been a big debate about what is indoors and outdoors, but currently patios that are outdoors are covered on the top and three walls, so that essentially having only one wall open is, if you will, a quasi indoor facility. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you so much. Why don't we have Ms. Michelson go next, and then we can have Mr. Cosgrove follow up. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair Leininger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stacey Michelson. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties. For those of you who I don't testify before regularly, I always like to remind folks that your local boards of county commissioners and county courts actually are also your local boards of public health, and our members have statutory responsibility as the local public health authority. So that's really my primary role in sitting here today and taking a look at this bill from that public health perspective. With that said, I want to say that we really appreciated the work that went into the work group. It was a good discussion. We felt like folks really tried to come together and make some compromise and some moves. And we really appreciate the creative work that went into finding a way to work around some of our Indoor Clean Air Act regulations and work around creating a bill that would create violations to that. But with that said, we do still have some concerns and are still in opposition to 307, even with the dash one. And so I'll lay some of those concerns out for you. I also want to preface this by saying we absolutely understand the need to have this conversation and the need to have a path forward on this issue. I think that's been made quite clear. We've had some good conversations with the city of Portland around some of their issues and inability to regulate, some events and things where they know that marijuana use may already be occurring. We absolutely hear that and take that to heart and are happy to continue a conversation here. But we do have concerns that, while this is an opt-in and we love that, cities can opt in and counties don't really get a say in that. And we are concerned that there will still be a burden on counties from either a public health perspective, potentially very likely some sort of local public safety issue. While we appreciate having removed edibles from this piece to try to reduce instances of driving under the influence, we still suspect that those issues will come up and that our county sheriff's departments will be involved in that from time to time. And there's not really a mechanism in this bill to provide any additional resources for our folks to address that. But overall, one of our main overarching concerns is really around regulatory questions that have come up. As previous panelist from Multnomah County mentioned, currently under the Indoor Clean Air Act, it is your local board of public health that would respond to complaints stemming from that. And so even though, you know, we're not talking about indoor smoking, the porches would still fall under Indoor Clean Air Act regulations. So we would very much like to see Senate Bill 308 move forward with appropriate amendments to continue this conversation, but bring agency folks to the table and have a more thoughtful discussion around some of the regulatory pieces that we feel are left unaddressed in this bill. And with that said, we would absolutely commit to engaging in that conversation during the interim and coming back in 18 to work on this issue. But we can't get there on the dash ones. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Mr. Cosgrove, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, and members of the committee. Paul Cosgrove representing Renaissance Solutions. Renaissance, through its trade name, Terrapin Care Station, has operated as a retailer and processor of marijuana products in three Colorado cities, Denver, Boulder, and Aurora, since 2009, and will soon open a retail operation and a processing facility in the city of Eugene. And here, in support of Senate Bill 307, and in particular the Dash 1 amendments, Renaissance Solution is a supporter of the responsible, well-regulated, and appropriate adult use of marijuana products. And that's what the voters of Oregon, of course, said when it passed, as did voters in several other states recently, to legalize the use of marijuana by adults. I'd like to point out that the process after this bill passes, if it passes, is still a very long road before you get to social consumption. Mr. Chapman mentioned that that process has many other steps, and it has the steps of opt-in, which you've already heard people testify about, but it also has a long regulatory process at OLCC. And as on behalf of somebody who's represented the distilled spirits industry for many years, I appreciate and recognize that OLCC, both with this product and with distilled spirits, has a long history of careful, considered work groups and regulatory processes that will look at all of the very details that are appropriate to be done at the agency level, and that will take a good deal of time, and that will have to happen even before the opt-in happens. So there will be an additional forum, if this bill passes, for those discussions to occur. It's the appropriate forum, I think, and I think they've proven that in the licensing process they've started for retail stores and processors, they're capable of coming to the correct conclusions, and if they make a mistake, of correcting it. So urge you to take this first step to start that process of the regulatory process and the process at local governments to opt in and have their own time, place, and manner restrictions as they choose. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Senator Prezanski.
Just real quick, I guess I'm taken back by anyone saying we need a more thoughtful discussion on this when we had a task force that I think were very thoughtful in what they did and what they brought forward. And I think it was very perspective way of looking at how we could actually have something moving forward. And then I think the other thing, Madam Co-Chair, I know Senate Bill 308 is the one that was would establish a task force to go forward, but I assume that if 307 passed, we could in fact actually have that task force embedded in there if it's not already.
Interesting point. Thank you. Senator Farrell.
Madam Chair, the question is for the OHA representative. I believe there are some 60,000 OHA licensed patients that are consuming medical.
80,000.
I sit corrected, Madam Chair. It's 80,000, and I have no reason to question that number.
Yeah,
thank you.
Correct.
Thank you. And I just wondered if the Oregon Health Authority counsels those 80,000 people against consumption of marijuana because it could be hazardous to their health.
So, co-chairs and Senator Ferrioli. So, the Oregon Health Authority, we have the Medical Marijuana Card Program, OMMP. And so what that is physicians are recommending a card to their patients, and we're the ones who issue the card, making sure that the steps have been followed. And again, we recently developed guidelines for clinicians, mostly around making sure that patients were evaluated appropriately when this was recommended and that they were tracked over time and made sure that marijuana was, that their symptoms or whatever they were being prescribed for was in fact improving. And again, the list of conditions are obviously in statute, but that's where our role is limited. So we have not taken a stance for saying that marijuana should be prescribed for some or recommended for some conditions and should not. Again, that's all listed in statute. I will say as a physician, I will not, and the working group that pulled together the clinical guidelines did not recommend smoking specifically, inhaling particulate matter as a form for ingesting or getting marijuana. So if people are looking for, there's different components, THC, CBD, et cetera. There's a variety of things. But again, that's a discussion that the patient needs to be having with their clinician. But again, the task force advised against inhaling smoke.
Madam Chair, I find it ironic that the Oregon Health Authority, which has administrative authority over the Oregon medical marijuana patients, advises against inhalation. I have no way of categorizing how many of the patients inhale as their chosen method of administering THC. I wouldn't expect them to inhale CBDs. But I think that it's just an interesting irony, I think, that the folks that are in charge of administering the medical program are here testifying in opposition to the recreational program where it involves inhalation. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to enjoy and appreciate the irony.
Thank you, Senator Fraley. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. Mr. Cosgrove, you look like you have a comment.
I meant to mention one other thing just for the benefit of the record. We would not be the first state down this pathway. The California Initiative, so by law, California has social clubs. They have not done the implementing regulations. They would be at about the same place we are entering into implementing regulations at OLCC a few months ahead of us. Maine is in the same place, social clubs with very much similar restrictions as in Senate Bill 307-1. Their initiative also includes that. And my client informs me that Nevada's regulations to actually implement a program of social clubs will take effect July 1st, 2017. So we are not on exactly the cutting edge. We're among the first, but there are other states going down this path. We're not alone. Just wanted
thank
that
you.
On the
That's
record.
Important. All right, any other comments? All right, thank you, panel. And now we will invite forward, we have three folks from the City of Portland who I believe would like to appear together, Christine Lewis, Brooke Nelson, and Brandon Goldner. And then after that, we will invite Scott Winkles, Jennifer Lauder, and Samantha Montanaro, please.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Christine Lewis, lobbyist with the City of Portland. I just wanted to say thank you, particularly to Senator Farioli and his office, for a really good process in a work group. We first testified on this bill on Oregon's birthday, February 14th. It feels like eons ago, and actually a lot of good work has happened between then and now to get us to the dash ones. So we worked, I was at the table alongside stakeholders from public health, other local governments, and advocates, and it was a really productive process, so thank you. City of Portland is here today in support of Senate Bill 307-1. It's important, one, for establishing the next steps in equity in our marijuana laws, and two, we always support local control. So any outstanding issues, either within this session or looking forward, we're happy to come to the table and be helpful and productive. I will turn it over to other folks from the City of Portland at this point.
Thank you.
Good evening, co-chairs and fellow members. My name is Brooke Nelson, and I am the senior advisor to Mayor Ted Wheeler, and I represent the City of Portland. We're here on behalf of our vision is for public health and safety and for equity. Many of you may know that in the past there have been legislation that has had a disparate impact on members of a low economic status, people and their families. Since the passing of Measure 91, Oregonians and visitors may find themselves able to legally purchase cannabis but with no place to consume it. So basically, if you don't own property within the state of Oregon, you cannot legally consume cannabis. And for those individuals who are fortunate enough to own property, who feel the need that they don't want to consume in front of their families or children. They also do not have a venue in which to do so. There are restrictions on smoking, vaporizing, and rented housing and apartments, the desire to keep consumption out of the house of children, as I formally stated, and public consumption in parks or on the street is not lawful. Senate Bill 307 will provide a legal, regulated, and safe place for folks to consume cannabis legally. This could help Oregon with the cannabis tourism and offer a way for visitors to enjoy Oregon's craft and cannabis industry. Mayor Wheeler and his leadership, he is fully committed to addressing this issue through constructive collaboration with stakeholders, including Multnomah County, Washington County, and Clackamas County as well. So basically, what we'd like to do is move forward. Measure 91 has passed, and we want to make the state acceptable to all members and those who are visiting and coming into the state as well.
Thank you.
Hello, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brandon Goldner. I'm the assistant coordinator of the City of Portland's cannabis program. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 307 and the Dash 1 amendments, and specifically to speak about cannabis events and consumption. So I've been doing this job for about a year and a half, and the city does know that these cannabis events will take place regardless of whether or not there is a regulatory framework for them. Last year and this year, we saw a range of different kinds of events. Those events had different impacts and different best practices. And in the city's view, a regulatory framework for these events with consumption would offer Portland and all Oregon communities clear and enforceable policies and expectations. It would make sure that organizers of those events are giving consistent information to the vendors of those events and for the patrons. It would also make it more likely that any potential negative impacts from those events, be it the consumption areas, minor access, security, safety, all of those things would be mitigated with a clear regulatory framework for cannabis events. And as both Christine and Burke spoke to, just echoing their sentiments and to say, for our tourism industry, we are in a place now where folks can come to Oregon, they can legally purchase cannabis, may not have a place to consume it. So from that perspective, events with consumption options would also give consumers another place where they could enjoy Oregon's craft cannabis industry. So with that, I will end, and I'm happy to take any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these representatives from the City of Portland? Really appreciate your coming down. Thank you for all of your work on this new legal sector, making sure it fits within our communities.
Thank you.
All right, next up we've got Scott Winkle, Jennifer Lauder, and Samantha Montanaro. And then for our final panel signed up for Senate Bill 307, we've got Don Morse, Jesse Horton, and Pete Kramer. Please. Hi, please go in any order. Start by stating your name for the record.
Sure.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in support of the legislation and the Dash 1 amendments. The League was a participant in the work group, and we appreciate the constructive process that resulted in this product. Again, even at the passage of this legislation, I think we're a long way from actually opening an on-site consumption facility. Once OLCC goes to the rules, then there will be a robust conversation among the cities that are interested. We do have some members that want to explore this option. We also have members who aren't eager to have marijuana on their council agendas in the near future. They've been through quite a lot, but there is that interest, and the ordinance process is a public process. Nobody's going to adopt this as an emergency ordinance. We're input from the public health officials, from the community, from local physicians. That will all be welcome and part of the process that cities will go through to adopt this. And with that, I'm eager for any questions.
Thanks so much.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Lauder, and I'm an educator, a business owner, a writer, and most importantly, a parent. I spent the first 15 years of my career as a classroom teacher and an advocate for children and families, analyzing programs and policies to determine best outcomes for those without a political voice. I've dedicated my life to supporting and empowering youth, and my interest in the cannabis movement is motivated by my understanding that regulation is indeed better for our children than prohibition. I am here today in support of SB 307 because a sensible social consumption law would bring significant economic opportunities to our state while positively impacting public health and safety, particularly the health and safety of our children. Thank you for considering the issue of cannabis so thoughtfully here in Oregon and deciding that the effects of legalization are preferable to the effects of prohibition. Our progressive approach has made us a bellwether in this emerging industry and will surely serve as a model for other states. But the gray area situation created by legalizing the purchase and consumption of cannabis while continuing to prohibit social use does not benefit our communities and is clearly not tenable. As a parent and an educator, I know that children need honest, open, age-appropriate information about complex issues like cannabis. Currently, our efforts to teach children about cannabis science, responsible adult cannabis consumption, and progressive drug policy are undermined by this gray regulatory area. At bus stops, parks, and playgrounds, we witness public cannabis consumption on a regular basis, which contradicts what we believe and tell our daughter about the benefits of regulation. The challenge for parents then is twofold. In addition to the problem of inappropriate public consumption, parents who wish to responsibly consume cannabis are left with few places outside of their homes in which to do so. Many of us don't want to expose our children to secondhand smoke, and many of us prefer to keep our consumption private. We deserve access to safe, legal spaces away from children for responsible social cannabis consumption. Finally, the lack of social consumption legislation has the most significant impact on marginalized populations. It is a generally accepted precept, supported by statistics from across the country, that minorities and poor people are disproportionately targeted and arrested for cannabis crimes, including public consumption. These are often the same people who face eviction or arrest for consuming cannabis in rental homes or public housing. This further destabilizes already underserved communities and families, and of course negatively affects the children in those situations. SB 307 would ensure that children are not exposed to cannabis consumption and that their parents and other responsible adults have places away from minors in the public eye in which to consume. It would guarantee access to consumption sites only by consenting adults and should reduce the number of people who consume in public. By offering reasonable rights to responsible adults while shielding our children from exposure to cannabis smoke, SB 307 would certainly benefit the public health and safety of our citizens and communities. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for everything you've been doing, Madam Co-Chairs and the committee. My name is Samantha Montanaro. And I am an OMMP patient and also a mother. My medical cannabis card has allowed me to be free of opioids. I have osteoarthritis and scoliosis and have been off of pills for the 2.5 years that I've been in Oregon. For me as a mother of my 8-year-old, we also homeschool. For me as a patient and a homeschooling mother, the current regulations pose obvious contradictions. I am a homeowner, but my home is surrounded by other houses and a church. Standing in my yard does not feel comfortable for me to consume cannabis. I wanted to make a little note about, I think, the OHA representative who said something about smoking cannabis not being recommended for patients. For people who have chronic pain, sometimes the only thing that can help you function is something to get your mind off of it, which cannabis is really successful at doing. I use topicals and concentrates to deal with serious pain when it's happening, but sometimes it's just something I have to live with, and smoking a bowl is often the best way for me to be able to function in my life as a parent, business owner, board member of Venture Portland and Historic Park Rose in my neighborhood. I think that this is a really common sense and incremental approach to public consumption. I would love to see much more But I'm excited at the fact that we're even talking about this, and that hopefully I'm going to be able to have a space to go outside of my home, not around my child, and to be able to be with other patients and other people who like to consume cannabis. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Any questions for this panel? All right. Thanks for coming in. That was really helpful. All right. We have three more people signed up for this hearing. We have Don Morris, Jesse Horton, and then Mr. Kramer. I know you sometimes like to be the very last speaker. We have two panels.
I'll speak about this as well.
Okay. Also on this one. Very good. All right. Please go ahead in any order. Mr. Horton, nice to see you again. It's been a
pleasure.
Couple months.
I guess I'll go first. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. My name is Jesse Horton. I am a local Oregon business owner and also the chairman and co-founder of the Minority Cannabis Business Association, a national organization and the largest that's focused on ensuring that communities that were targeted through the war on drugs have the opportunity to benefit through cannabis legalization. That's jobs, that's business ownership, and that's also by safe access to cannabis in the communities that needed some of them that needed the most. A lot of people have taken my thunder with some of these different issues, so I don't want to be too redundant to everyone here today. But just a little bit about myself. My father, when I was young, went to prison for 7 years as a result of cannabis distribution. When he got out of prison, he was lucky enough to get a job and work with that job for 35 years to retire as a vice president. So much to his dismay, when I started using cannabis, they were very, very scared and worried. I ended up getting arrested myself 3 times for cannabis possession. As a result, I was turned down from numerous jobs. I lost a scholarship in college, so I had to drop out and get back into my engineering program by working. I lost a lot of opportunities as a result of that charge being on my record. Lucky enough, again, I slipped through the cracks and I was able to get on with the global Fortune 50 engineering company and get past some of those things. But there are a lot of people who have been lost in that shuffle as a result of cannabis possession charges and distribution charges. A lack of social consumption laws directly contradicts the intent of cannabis legalization by restricting legal safe access to regulated products and medicine. This hurts not only local business and tax incomes, but most importantly, the citizens that voted for each one of you. Ironically and unfortunately, the citizens that are hurt most by the absence of these social consumption policies are those very people that were systematically targeted through cannabis prohibition. People of lower socioeconomic backgrounds, which includes many people of color in Oregon, have housing restraints that force them to risk losing their homes, children, and even their freedom by consuming legal cannabis. So I just want to reiterate that. People who are renting homes here are forced with losing their homes, their children, and even their livelihood in many cases by consuming a legal product that we're all benefiting from a tax perspective. In Oregon, a state with some of the most lenient cannabis laws, a lot of us don't even think this is a problem. Laws are open. The most lenient cannabis laws and the lowest number of black people among any state still arrest blacks for cannabis crimes at a rate of 3 times the amount of whites. Even places like Multnomah County, the whitest city essentially in Portland, the whitest city in America, has a 3-to-1 arrest ratio of blacks to whites in that city alone. Many of these arrests come from citizens consuming cannabis in their cars, parks, and parking lots in order to prevent losing the roof over their family's head. Asking citizens to figure this out on their own and risk their livelihood or their freedom while supporting a thriving cannabis industry in our state and benefiting from tax funds would be an absolute shame for our state. I call myself an Oregonian, and I know people are very protective of that word. I've only been here for 5 years, so some people maybe behind me are scoffing, saying that I'm really not, but I really have bought into Oregonian values in a number of ways. And I think that our values do not support leaving out the people who are in need the most in favor of business. I know that this bill has been changed in order to align with the Clean Air Indoor Act. This greatly reduces the amount of potential locations near communities of color. When I was working with the committee, one representative mentioned the Indoor Clean Air Act was their holy Bible and their Quran wrapped into one.
Though I appreciate the dedication, it's very well-intentioned act. I fear that, very similar to extreme religious interpretations, good intentions without proper context will hurt those who we were intending to protect. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Morse.
Hello. Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, my name is Donald Morse. I'm the director of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. In the last 3 years or so, we have taken many first steps together in the effort to create safe access for patients and for the general public. Senate Bill 307 represents another one of those first steps. As Sam Chapman has said, it may not be perfect, as a lot of the things we have worked with you to pass in the last 3 years, but we have come back from time to time to make the necessary changes an effort to create that perfection. I believe that the time is now to make the first step with social use that, as we've said before, you can use cannabis as long as you're levitating while you do it. Unfortunately, ever since it was made legal for patients in, 1998, I guess, that there have been a number of rules and laws and whatnot that have ultimately discriminated against those people in their effort to use it and made it very, very difficult. This is one of the last areas of that, and I think we need to pass this bill in order to move in a direction of safe access. And I would like to comment that I find it unfortunate that members of the healthcare community keep bringing up the normalization or socialization of cannabis in Oregon society. Not only has it been here long before it was legal, it is now legal. And the majority of Oregonians support safe access to cannabis. And I think that rather than fighting it at a level that they were used to for many, many years, which was that it was a drug for which people should, as Jesse was saying, be put in prison over, that there should be a new thought process to educating our youth and whatnot, just as we do when they walk by a bar or anything else parents and whatnot have a responsibility to educate them. I don't think what we're doing here is going to jeopardize any facet of our society. And I would hope that eventually the healthcare community could kind of change their model to fall in line with what society wants. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Thanks for being here and hearing from me. My name's Pete Kramer. I'm a patient, a medical patient. I've survived 40 years since my motorcycle accident where I had a serious head injury. I have carpal tunnel. I use healing oil of cannabis to relieve the pain. I smoke the cannabis to get an immediate effect when it's necessary. This is a good opportunity for people to have a place to go and socialize and be away from their children, and that it's a good vote, yes. The patients are the main concern. These people can't get out of their house because they're handicapped. They're in wheelchairs. They're bedridden. When the law was passed for the patients, you slipped by Section 20, where all people are created equal, or be treated equally. I see many different prizes. I've seen our organization take money and put it into other parts of the organization. And now we ask money for more money from the patients. They're on limited incomes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any questions for this panel? Senator Przanski.
Not a question, just a statement. Jesse, we moved here too some years back, but I always say Oregonian since, and for you, since 2012.
There we go. There we go. I'm claiming it, all right?
All right. Any other comments for this panel?
Are we finished with our testimony, Madam Chair?
Yes, I believe we are.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank the folks that offered testimony. If I need to apologize for my angst over the Oregon Health Authority's attitude toward regulating cannabis, I certainly want to put that on the record. But what I really want to do is thank the people in the work group. This was a wide-ranging series of discussions over a period of time that gave dissenters a clear opportunity to express their concerns about public health issues, the Clean Air Act and the Indoor Clean Air Act and others. I think that what has come out of this is an extraordinary discussion, very respectful of people with dissenting opinions. And I think we've moved about as far to the middle on resolving the first step toward a social venue as we could. But I tell you, I believe there's a doctoral thesis waiting to be written if somebody cares to look at the question and how we tried to resolve it and the testimony that was taken. It's quite moving, quite interesting, and I really respect and thank the people that offered their testimony, because I think it was all honestly offered, regardless of what side of the question it was on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Any other comments? All right. Thank you for being here, all of you.
Thank
you. With
that,
we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 307. We're going to open an information session that features Ms. Deanna Mack from the Department of Revenue. A couple of weeks ago, we had a request from Representative Wilson. I think it followed on the heels of some news coverage also about the marijuana tax revenue and what the status of distribution is. And Ms. Mack, we are so appreciative that you're here. We also have about 10 people signed up for a public hearing that is going to happen subsequent to this. So I'd like to simultaneously welcome you and let you know about that other context. So thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And Adam Crawford asked me the other day if I could come and talk to the committee about current state, what the current distribution formula is, and actually talk a little bit about how Senate Bill 845 is going to change that. So I'll make it quick. Right now, current law allows the Liquor Control Commission to continue to spend from the liquor fund until June 30th of 2017. Current law also requires the Department of Revenue to pay back the liquor fund before we make any other distributions. It also requires that we do that before September 30th of 2017. So what that means in practicality is that the earliest distributions could be no earlier than July 1 of 2017, because the liquor fund can continue to be borrowed from until through June 30th. We need a little bit of time to reconcile that process and issue distributions to the local governments. What that did effectively was it effectively prevented the population component of distribution to not be used in current law, because it was required to be done for distributions before July 1 of 2017, which would never happen. So what ends up happening is obviously the cities and counties want to have their money earlier than that. They would like to have it based in some part on population. So right now where we're at on distributions is we have, I think we posted yesterday on our website, the most recent receipts, another $4.4 million in receipts. So the program has all-time receipts of almost $79 million. Our fiscal year so far is about $58 million. The earliest that we'll be able to start distributing that is in August under current law. We have a little bit of time to reconcile, and we have to distribute based on the formula that's based on licenses after July 1 of 2017, because the distribution is made after July 1 of 2017. That's current state. So do you have any questions about current state?
And folks, committee members, please feel free to ask any questions you have. We have another public hearing, but this is really important, so I want to make sure we give people enough time to explore this. Senator Farrell.
Madam Chair, I absolutely understand the necessity of a reconciliation before a final balance sheet is authorized. What authority would you need to do a partial disbursement or a reserve held against the final reconciliation that would give you the opportunity to make a partial disbursement to the other jurisdictions that need the revenue? You know, we have expectations that the law enforcement and public health and education and other beneficiaries will be able to participate, but they're effectively blocked until that final reconciliation. So is there been any discussion about a reserve, the creation of a reserve against the final reconciliation, which would give you the idea that maybe a partial disbursement could be made to the other jurisdictions?
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Farrioli, I do not know if the legislature is having those types of conversations about that, but it's certainly an option. The provision in the current law says that we have to pay the liquor fund back before any distributions are made. You could change that.
Madam Chair, I would suggest strongly that the anticipated cost of the OLCC could be paid to the OLCC from the current receipts and even overpaid, leaving a balance against reconciliation. And in that final reconciliation, whatever adjustments need to be made, but holding on to those millions, the optics are bad. And, you know, I suppose we should all be comfortable to blame the legislature for its lack of foresight. But to me, it doesn't look very good to let the money pile up at the OLCC. Do you have an estimate of what your costs are going to be? What are they to date?
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Farrioli, I think maybe the OLCC could speak to what their costs are. I believe there was a bill that gave them limitation for that, but I don't know that exact number off the top of my head. Somewhere around $8 million, I believe. I'm not sure.
So, Madam Chair, if it's $8 million and we're holding up $74 million in disbursements, certainly a $10 million reserve or some reasonable amount could be paid to the OLCC so that the interpretation would be that they are fully reimbursed for their costs, and then the rest of that fund be dispersed as it was intended, and then a final reconciliation on the end of the fiscal year would perhaps allow us to disperse even more to the jurisdictions and the sub-accounts that we authorized in the original bill. The conversation we ought to have.
Thank you. We have Senator Cruz and then Senator Przanski have questions.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Heading soon to a Senate floor near us is a bill dealing with the marijuana tax, and Senator Haas and I were looking one direction. The co-chairs went a different direction, and so that bill will reflect what the co-chairs have done with the marijuana tax, and I believe they've spent it all.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, please.
They may have put it into a budget line, but yes, they haven't moved it out of the OLCC checking account yet. So there it stays.
That is true, but I think that's what the bill that's coming is going to deal with. So,
okay. Any House members want to? All right, we'll go to Senator Przanski and then Rep. Wilson, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So just following up on the optics, and Dan, I know this isn't new. I received an email, ironically, this morning from a teacher talking about monies from the marijuana taxes, mm-hmm. as to layoffs are being forecast in one of the school districts, and that they're wondering where is the money that supposedly
is going to be going to the distribution system. So there is people out there that are doing that. So that's first. And second, I'll just ask, not that you will have the answer now. There has been some discussions, and I think you and I did talk about this earlier on, and I hadn't followed up. But there's been some request that the tax that's currently collected for selling of seeds, as to whether that is necessary or appropriate to be taxing seeds. And a question I got from one of our colleagues was, how much would that is that being impacted? And I don't know if the Department of Revenue actually has breakdowns as to what products, cannabis products, are being sold or taxed, so you would know, is there a breakout for how much we're bringing in for seed sales of taxes?
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Prozanski, I believe that there is a breakdown as of the tracking in metric that OLCC has. And I know at least for sales, and we could probably back into a tax number. I believe your staff asked our staff that question and we provided an answer, but I don't remember it off the top of my head. But I can certainly follow up in my email and see if there's something there.
Yeah, I apologize if you already have. Thank you.
I'll follow up and make sure that I have that number, but yeah, okay.
Thank you, and Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Mack, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate that explanation. I also appreciate what Senator Farioli had to say. We're never going to do well in Josephine County if this is distributed by population or number of licenses, unfortunately. Much of our frustration in Josephine County comes from the fact that canopy size and actual delivery of the product out of the ground gets no reward. And so that deals with something we've got to do and we've got to work on. But I truly trust as we move down the track that we can begin to honor in the distribution formula those counties that actually produce the product itself, which now are being terribly shortchanged in the process. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Ms. Mack, I think you're going to go into Senate Bill 845, but for people who are watching and members of the committee who may not be aware of this, there is a Senate bill that is being heard outside of the Marijuana Committee, I think in the Senate Revenue, that originated with, I think Senator Cruz was the original drafter, perhaps with someone else, but it's been, I think, amended to have a totally different distribution than Senator Cruz.
They call it a gut and stuff, I think.
So yeah, something that we call a gut and stuff. And I think people will be interested to know it actually totally changes the distribution formula, and it is headed to a vote on the Senate floor. So it's pretty far down the track. And maybe you want to describe for us what that amendment would do, and then I don't know if we have additional questions, great. Otherwise, we will take that all under advisement and move forward to our next.
Madam Chair, before that, let me say that I think the attempt with that was to stay as true to the ballot measure as it was possible to do.
With your original?
No, with what's coming to the floor.
Okay, great.
Madam Chair, I think you might have said as I was looking at something else, but the main change is it puts the education money into the formula instead of the common school fund.
Right.
Is this the dash six,
where
just for clarification?
Where it can actually be used.
Senate Bill 845-6. Do you want to go ahead and describe it? Are you in a position
happy to do that?
Okay,
I'm happy to do that. So the bill that's scheduled to be voted on the floor tomorrow is Senate Bill 845 as amended by the dash six amendment. So what that does is it requires the Department of Revenue to certify quarterly and then transfer 20% of the money that's in the current the Oregon marijuana account as follows. So 10% of it goes to half of that 20% goes to cities, half of it goes to counties. Okay, so 10 of that portion that goes to cities, I'll make sure I'm at the right part. 75% of that portion that goes to the cities is going to be based on population from the previous quarter. 25% of that, of their share, is going to go to them based on the sum of the grower licenses, processor licenses, wholesaler licenses, and retailer licenses in that jurisdiction. So that's how the cities are going to be broken out. Now, if any city opts out, then the city gets nothing under this bill. So the counties, the way that you've got this structured for the counties, is that they will also get their share, 10%, and it will be, the Department of Revenue will transfer it to the counties. So half of their share is going to be based on the grow area in the commercially available area of all grow canopies in the county that's associated with a producer license based on the prior calendar quarter. So that gets to some of what Representative Wilson was talking about. The other half of their share is going to be based on the sum of processor, wholesaler, and retailer licenses in their jurisdiction. Okay. Again, their opt-out is slightly different, where the cities, if they opt out at all, they don't get any. But in this particular, if the county opts out of the grower, then the provisions, they don't get that part of the proceeds. If they opt out of the licensing component, then they don't get that part of the proceeds of their share. Okay, so that's the 20%. The other 80% stays in the Oregon marijuana account, and it's got dedicated purposes. So it must be used, 30% of it must be used for the same purpose as what's in the state school fund. 20% must be used for the same purpose of the mental health and alcoholism and drug services account. 15% must be used solely for the purpose of the money that's in the state police account for the same purposes. 10% must be used for the community college support fund. 5% must be used for the same purpose as alcohol and drug abuse prevention. The city and county opt-outs are also provided in that bill, the instructions for that. There's some conforming amendments, and then at the very end, there is a one-time provision. We view this as a one-time provision in Section 6 of 845, as amended, that rectifies basically the population-based distributions that would not have happened under current law. So it would allow us to take the 10% that belongs to the cities that the DOR has collected prior to July 1 of 2017, that we will send that to the cities based on their share of the population as of July 1, 2017. Same thing for the counties. We would send their share, their 10%, to the counties based, that's accumulated that DOR has collected prior to July 1, 2017. Which is a chunk of money over that I mentioned earlier, that would go based on their share of the population. So that provision is repealed January 1 of 2018, so it fixes the one-time distribution. It doesn't accelerate the timeline. We still have to pay the liquor fund back first, but it does get them the revenues that they were hoping to get based on population rather than based on only licenses. So it does rectify at least part of it.
Thank you, and I want to pick up the comment that Senator Cruz noted. So this change is actually keeps fairly closely to some of the distribution that was in the original statute. So I think people had a variety of ideas in a variety of bills that would have significantly changed how marijuana revenue is used, but it sounds like this one keeps true to a lot of the original targets for how marijuana revenue would be used.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I mean, for example, the money that was supposed to go to the Common School Fund, the way it was written, didn't actually do that. So just by putting it in the formula accomplishes the same purpose. So I think the attempt was made to try to be ballot measures don't necessarily get everything right. And so I think the attempt here was to be as true to the intent of the ballot measure as we could.
I think, Madam Chair and Senator Cruz, I think what you're referring to is the Common School Fund versus the State School Fund.
Right, right.
The original ballot had Common,
right,
and they probably intended State.
Right,
yes,
right.
Gotcha.
Excellent. I think I'll invite forward Mr. Marks. Would you like to, from OLCC, want to make a comment? And then if we have any further comments for this panel on this issue, great. Otherwise, we'll close this public hearing, this information session, and move to a public hearing on 2198.
Thank you. For the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. I just want to be clear about one thing. When we are repaid, that is immediately distributable through the liquor fund. So it won't go to an account. We've borrowed the money, and because of our fees have gone up, we actually borrowed less than our budget limitation. So we will, within a month of receiving that, distribute it to the formula for distribution. So I wanted to just make that clear.
Right. Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
I just want to say, I know that it's not the Oregon Liquor Control Commission or the Department of Revenue that high centered us on the distribution,
The legislature did it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks for that. Okay, great. Thank you so much. We're going to close the information session on Department of Revenue and status of the marijuana revenue, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2198. I will ask Mr. Crawford to describe the bill and the changes, or let's see, why don't you just give us a brief orientation, then Mr. Mayor, we'll have you come forward and identify the changes from the last set of amendments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2198 was last heard on May 9th. The committee is currently being asked to consider the newest amendments, the dash 17s, the dash 18s, the dash 19s, and the dash 20s.
So, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to have you focus on the dash 17 amendments and how it is different from, I guess it was the dash 9, was that the primary amendment last time? And then also please describe briefly the key elements of the 18, 19, and 20. Thank you.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, again, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel, here to briefly discuss the changes from the dash 9s to the dash 17 amendments to House Bill 2198. The front matter for this particular amendment remains largely the same. The sections that are underneath the title Oregon Cannabis Commission, those are pretty much the same as in the dash 9 amendments, with the exception that there is a slight change to compensation that may be received by the commission members. In the original bill, they may receive compensation, and in this draft, they may receive travel expenses only. So that was the only change there. On page 5 of the amendment, marijuana grow site transfers to Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensees. This is the 20-pound amendment that we discussed with respect to the dash 9s, allowing medical growers to sell into the OLCC system. We added one provision to the content of the dash 9s, and that provision allows OLCC, if they determine that there is an excess of marijuana entering into the market, to either reduce the amount of marijuana that may enter the market from the medical growers or to suspend this particular provision, the allowance allowed under this particular provision. It requires the commission not only to determine that there's an excess of marijuana entering, but that the market itself will not correct for it. So it does allow for that. On page 6 of the amendment, designated primary caregivers, that section is exactly the same. Plant limits. I will briefly skip over this section just because it is the most complicated piece of this particular amendment. On page 9, tracking. If you remember correctly, there were a few provisions that either addressed the tracking in Senate Bill 1057 or amended those provisions. One of those provisions set forth a schedule by which, in 1057, set forth a schedule by which marijuana growers in the medical system would be subject to tracking. That was amended in the Dash 9 amendments to provide a different schedule. That has been removed from this amendment. So underneath this amendment, the Dash 17 amendments, the schedule provision in Senate Bill 1057, if that became law, would remain.
Could you again go over that again?
Senate Bill 9 amended the schedule provision in Senate Bill 1057 to create a different schedule. It pushed back the date by which medical marijuana growers would be subject to tracking by 6 months.
Right.
That's been removed, so Senate Bill 1057 would now control in this amendment. This amendment also includes on page 11 material that this committee has seen before relating to schools. It's also, and this is the 1,000-foot within a school provision, that if OLCC determines that there is a barrier that would prevent minors from traversing from the school to a medical marijuana retailer, they'll allow that retailer to be located up to within 500 feet of the, for licensing purposes, of the school. And again, as it was said on the record last week, this particular provision does not prevent a city or county from raising that distance to 1,000 feet if they would like. On page 12, these sections about amendments to statutes
This committee has seen this material before for the most part. What these amendments do partially is allow the Oregon Liquor Control Commission more flexibility with how they discipline their licensees with respect to suspending or revoking their license. This allows them to restrict a license so that there's an intermediary step between allowing a licensee off and also suspending or revoking. So they can do something in the middle. The only part of this amendment that is any different in these statutes is on page 14. This amendment would specifically allow marijuana retailers that are owned by the same person or substantially the same persons or person to transfer their product back and forth between stores. Okay, so they would have to be owned basically by the same person or a conglomerate of people that is substantially underneath a single umbrella ownership. And so that is something that is new to this amendment. And now I will briefly address, hopefully, the plant limits, which begin on page 6. If this committee remembers correctly, Senate Bill 1057 created a ratio for medical marijuana grows, both patient grows and those grows that are more businesslike in nature, designated grows. And the ratio was for each mature plant, a person could grow 2 immature plants. The -9 amendments to House Bill 2198 replace that with a 3-6 ratio, where 6 immature plants that were 3 immature plants that were 24 inches or higher could be grown for each mature plant, and 6 immature plants that were less than 24 inches could be grown for each mature plant. So a total of 9. What this amendment does is it breaks out these ratios into 2 separate categories. It's easier to go over the designated growers. With respect to designated growers, it returns for most immature plants, those are 24 inches high or higher, it returns to the 2-1 ratio. These particular growers are going to be subject to tracking, though, so the decision was made that for the cuttings, there would not be a stipulation that you have to have a certain amount of immature marijuana plants. They're all going to be tracked as in the OLCC system, so we'll allow them to be tracked as they're tracked in the OLCC system according to trays. So for designated grows, the only requirement that's added in this amendment is for 24 inches or higher, those immature marijuana plants, there may be 2-1. For patient grows, which are not tracked, it's a little bit more complicated. First off, there's a strict 2-1 ratio between immature plants and mature plants in this amendment, whether they're 24 inches high or not. With respect to mature marijuana plants, and I'm going to just talk a little bit about Measure 91 in order to put everything in context. Underneath Measure 91, there is 4 plants allowed per household. Underneath this provision, there would be 6 plants allowed per patient cardholder. So those guys could grow 6. They would not be allowed to grow an additional 4 unless they also lived with a person who wasn't growing underneath the OMMP. So if a patient is living by him or herself, that patient can grow 6. If a patient is living with another person who's not a patient cardholder and not growing underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, they would be able to add to that 6 an additional 4. If there are 2 patient growers living in the same household, they can grow up to 12. So they can stack the 6 that are allowed for each patient. But under no circumstance, if this were to be adopted, would an address be allowed to produce more than 12. All right, so that's the new provision with respect to mature marijuana plants.
Okay, so, and now you're going to quickly move through the additional amendments. And we have about 20 minutes left, and we have about 10 people signed up to give public comment. So I'm happy to see after a few minutes, we have a couple of people who have driven over 100 miles. And I know this is a really important time because the session is running out. I just want everyone to have a sense of where we are in terms of timing and people.
I'll move through these very quickly. The -18 amendments to 2198 allow marijuana producers to process without getting a processing license concentrates if it involves a mechanical process or involves extraction using water. So it wouldn't even be the full array of processes by which you make concentrates underneath our statutes. It would be a very limited type of processing that would be allowed for producers. The other stipulation is that these are small grows. There are micro-tiers that may do this and not other producers. The Dash 19s require the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and the Oregon Health Authority to establish a telephone hotline so that counties and cities would be able to contact them with respect to whether or not a location is a premises for which a license has been issued or for which a license has been applied for. So they can double check and make sure that people who are setting up shop are actually authorized to do so. And then the Dash 20s merely specify for purposes of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act what constitutes an address of a marijuana grow site for purposes of registering with the Oregon Health Authority. In other words, what information do you have to turn over to say that I am located at this particular place? And those are those three amendments.
Okay. Does anyone want to ask a question now, kind of knowing the context? All right. Thanks so much, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to invite forward. We're going to move to 2 minutes per person to make sure that everyone has a chance to present. And then some of us will be able to stay around afterwards if you want to have additional one-on-one, if you want to give us your opinion.
And Madam Chair, I think it's important to emphasize that the record will be open, and I think we should probably leave it open till.
Yes, let's leave the record open all the way through till next Tuesday. How about that? Which means that if you don't get a chance to speak your whole testimony, you could submit written comments that will be on OLIS, and we'll have a chance to review those as well. Okay, so we'll start, please. Senator Prezant.
Madam Co-Chair, regarding the procedure, if we're going to have the bill back potentially for a vote on Tuesday, it seems like we would want to have a earlier time to close the record so we can get it and make sure we actually have a time to absorb
it. Great point. How about close the business on Friday? It's a great point. All right, so folks, feel free to submit written comments, or anyone who may be watching this, written comments by 5 p.m. on Friday for us to review prior to our next meeting, which is Tuesday. All right, Don Esch, please, Dan Kuzan, and Mike Rocklin. Then we have on deck Anna Simmons, Hunter Neubauer, and Oscar Nelson. You may begin in any order, and please state your name for the record, and we'll use a two-minute timer, please.
Hi. My name is Don Esch. Thank you for hearing me. I'm a veteran and a medical card holder, and I want to say that cannabis helps my PTSD tremendously. I can't take prescription drugs, but the cannabis works for me. And what I want to get at is, you want to change it to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Cannabis Commission. I would hope that when you have the Cannabis Commission that you would have people from the cannabis community and not just like ex-police and people like that, that you would have growers and you would have caregivers that knows about this subject, you know. And because I feel like cannabis patients are discriminated against in a lot of ways, and it's, you feel kind of like a secondhand citizen. And you were talking about the lounges. That would be a great step forward, yes, to have that. So that's basically what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. Really appreciate it. It's really nice to hear from people who may not come every single week. Your opinion really matters a lot.
Thank
and
you.
Also, folks, if you haven't testified here before, you can stay back from the mic by about 10 or 12 inches, and we can hear you just as well, and then there's a little less reverberation. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, members of the committee. I'm Dan Kuzer, Springfield, Oregon. I've been an activist for close to 20 years in cannabis legalization. I started out as a pro-legalization, just simply for use. It's a plant freedom. However, I've become very aware of the patients and what it actually can do for them. I've been constantly amazed by that. What I'm not amazed by is the way the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program has treated the patients. I want to remind everybody here that this program was set up to be self-sufficient. Not a cash cow. That's self-sufficient. The patients have been had money taken away from them and used for other things that should have been returned to them. These are sick people, and now the fees have gone up even more. There was a $50 grower fee. That was ridiculous. Now I understand there's a $200 grower fee. 2198, as I understand it, dash 12, I think, is, no, dash 20. So dash 20, we'll have, hopefully we'll take care of some of that. But like I said, and yes, the patients and people in general, I got to tell you, are very, very upset with this whole situation of Measure 91 being butchered by the legislature, ignored by the legislature. There's a lot of anger out there. We got a lot of people out there angry. I've been the leader of several organizations, and I've been a caregiver for several patients, and well, more than several. But anyway, so I'm here to tell you that people are not happy, and I'm really getting sick and tired of watching the cannabis industry with their big money leading you people around by the nose, and also lying law enforcement. The past years, I've been to many of these hearings, and law enforcement is noted for their lies. And I can bring examples if you like. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks for your time. Mr. Offen.
Hi, thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair's Joint Committee. Michael Rockland for the record, and I'll make it real brief that we've been waiting for a good bill. This looks like a really good one. We'd like to really see the Cannabis Commission help with real facts and data that we can use for education, research, and really high-quality products. So I'm going to yield my time to the compassionate Oregon, because I think he's got a lot more detail for you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Any questions for this panel, folks? Okay. Thank you. And next up, we'll invite forward Anna Simmons, Hunter Neubauer, and Oscar Nelson. And then on deck, we have Mason Walker, June
Bushting.
Thank you. And Anthony Taylor.
Hello, Madam Co-Chairs and Committee. My name is Anna Simons, and I'm a manager with Self-Made Farms. We're an OLCC-licensed producer with two farm sites in Jackson County, and we have an OLCC wholesale license in Portland, which allows us to partner with other small farms to sell and distribute their product. Our company is 100% owned by a married couple, Oregonians, Steve and Catherine Self, who run it hands-on. They've put their life savings into the business as well as all of their personal credit. I'm cutting this shorter. So most of our gardens have transitioned from the medical system into the recreational system already, or are in the process currently, but we do still have some involvement with medical grows. We provide medicine for patients with serious illnesses, many who qualify as low income. The bump up provision is a great option. It's relatively new, and we do hope to use it in the near future. It's just going to take some time to implement. We're here to oppose 2198 from our standpoint as both medical and recreational growers. Our business has spent significant funds and countless hours just on licensing and compliance. And to meet those requirements, we've used consultants like land use permitting professionals, a water rights surveyor, an architect, an engineer, attorneys. And we've invested in security systems and alarm monitoring. We've had to hire electricians, plumbers, and HVAC technicians to upgrade and permit our systems in order to meet building code requirements for licensing. These expenses are all on top of the regular costs of growing our crop. I have no doubt that House Bill 2198 is well-intentioned. However, it would punish the people who have bought in and committed most to seed-to-sale regulation and who have invested the most in complying. As a new industry, our fledgling businesses are facing a lot of upfront costs and financial demands, and this is the worst possible time to take an action that would further drive down the price of our crop. So we just feel like we deserve a level playing field in the market. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, and we appreciate your working to tailor the comments to the 2 minutes. So I know it's not easy, so thank you, everybody, for your willingness to work with us on that. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, chair members and legislators. Appreciate you hearing us out tonight. I drove from Bend. My name is Hunter Neubauer. I'm the chairman of the Legislative Committee for the Oregon Cannabis Association. I'm also a board member of the Bend Chamber of Commerce. I'm also a part of their legislative committee. I'm on the Rules Advisory Committee to the OLCC. I served on the Rules Advisory Committee for Bend and Deschutes County. I'm here to say that, you know, for the OCA, there's a lot in this bill that we really support, particularly the Dash 20 amendments. We think it's great. There's a lot of really good meat here. There's one portion of that bill that we're asking for some relief, and that's the Dash 17. We're concerned with the ability for a monitoring of the marketplace and trying to pick and choose when too much is too much or too little. Quite frankly, there's enough already. We think that the marketplace is going to do what it needs to do from a recreational standpoint and figure itself out. So as you've heard from other folks, it's important for us to have a level playing field and at the same time look at the medical program and say, look, why don't we take this a step forward and really do something for the patients? And in my personal opinion, look at the programs that are already in place. Look at the Oregon Health Authority, look at the Oregon Health Plan, and in sometime, maybe we have patients that are covered by their health insurance and their medicines covered that way. I think it's really important for us to take this slow and allow the businesses in this state who are investing and creating tax revenue for a situation that is dire. We all know we have a budgetary issue, but if we focus on growing the economy and the tourism surrounding the recreational cannabis industry, we will all succeed, and I think we'll see a big benefit. And at that point in time, the OHA should have the ability to focus on the medical program. There's already been a vast reduction of dispensaries, and we've seen that. So why not put some of those resources into addressing some of the concerns for the patients? Because like we've heard, the patients and the growers started this whole thing. It's about their relationship. So we ask you to please reconsider the Dash 17 amendments and move forward on the rest. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Hi, Madam Chair, Representatives, Senators. My name is Oscar Nelson. I am also a member of the Oregon Cannabis Association and co-founder and co-owner of Sweet Relief. We have stores in Tillamook County, Clatsop County, and Columbia County. And I back up what Hunter says as well, that there's a ton of really good meat. The moving product between like ownership, it helps a lot of things. A lot of this is really solid. Allowing that much product to come in from the medical market in a system that skirted a lot of the capital investment, it would put a business, I've been doing this for 3 years, and the entrepreneurial endurance that we have had to go through with all the regulation has been exhausting. This is a ticking time bomb. That much product coming in from the medical market is going to prevent me from putting capital investment in my business, potentially stalling a grow that I have going. If there is this much product coming in, it changes the marketplace. And as a business owner, you completely change my strategy moving forward. And it makes me incredibly nervous. I have so much money, time, energy. I employ 44 people, good paying jobs, tax paying jobs from people that couldn't get maybe a normal job at your normal mom and pop shop. These kids are learning how to budget money. This is going to drastically impact my business. Please rethink that aspect.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
I just want to clarify, and the two-minute time limit was a problem here. The Dash 17 amendment contains many elements, and I kind of gathered from your testimony you were mainly concerned about the 20-pound provision. And could you just tell me if that's true? I think I just saw you nodding.
Yes, ma'am.
That's absolutely correct, and I can speak behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Association and all of its members for that.
Okay, and then the follow-up is, Madam Chair, is the rest of the amendment acceptable, or have you looked at the rest of the amendment?
Yes, it truly does seem that way. I think that you guys have really done a lot of hard work, and for the most part, it seems fantastic. This is just, from a business standpoint, it could be it could be very detrimental to the cannabis economy.
Thank you. And I just wanted to clarify that you were talking about that one specific part where medical growers can sell up to 20 pounds a year into the program. Thank you.
Senator Przanski.
So, Hunter, I guess I'm kind of confused with your testimony because one of the first things I thought I heard you say was to honor those who came before, those that were in the medical program. And we know that those individuals and the growers that have been provided for them have had a very difficult time in trying to make ends meet. And this is a means to allow them to actually help pay those costs so they can, in fact, continue to provide for patients. So I understand from entrepreneurship, capitalist perspective of what where recreational is, but at the same time, if you're really wanting to honor and take care of those who came before that started this program back in 1998, it seems like we might want to give a little relief where they can actually make ends meet.
Madam Chair and Senator Przanski, I agree with you, I do, and I think that falls into the realm of the OHA and what the OHA is providing. I think that there is an opportunity for those people to create a value-based scenario where they still can provide patients the medicine that they need and recoup the costs that are necessary for doing so. But what we're talking about is, I think, a little bit different. If they would like to be a part of the recreational marketplace, there are micro-tier licenses. There is opportunity for them to do so. But in my opinion, the medical OHA program, the OMMP, is specifically for grower and patient relationships. And it seems like once we started to put dispensaries into that equation, it became more of a commercial industry, not necessarily a medical industry. And if I may, I used to be involved in the medical industry. I was in orthopedics for 10 years. So I sold total knees and total hips and trauma equipment. I worked in hospitals hundreds of hours a week. And I think that we're kind of kidding ourselves here that if we really do want to take care of patients, we have the opportunity here in Oregon to take a program that's fractured, rebuild it, and provide medicine for people that's covered by insurance programs, because that's truly what the heart of the medical program should be for, is taking care of sick people.
Thank you. I'm going to, Oscar, it looks like you have, Mr. Nelson, you have a follow-up point you wanted to make, and then I'm going to thank this panel and invite forward some of our next speakers.
Yeah, I just want to speak briefly to the medical, being able to get in the micro tier. Some of the areas may not be zoned, but that's what a lot of the medical people are looking to do, is to do the micro tier through the OLCC, which is at a lower rate. You know, having funds from a previous operation, it is fairly feasible to get into the micro tier at a reasonable rate.
And if we were allowed to work on some of the zoning issues within the within the rules, that would provide them that opportunity.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree, but, thank you guys for the time.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Next, we will invite forward Mason Walker, June Bushting, and Anthony Taylor. And then at the end, we have Jesse Sweet and Pete Kramer. So, committee members, if anyone has a place you need to be and you have to leave at 7 straight up, I understand. But I think I will definitely stay, and hopefully we can get a number of us to stay so that we can hear these good folks. Welcome.
I'll go first. Co-Chairs Burdick, Linger, and members of the committee and others in attendance. For the record, my name is June Bushing, testified on the behalf of my co-op garden and other OMMP-only growers, mostly in opposition of House Bill 2198 and the combining of the OLCC growers and the OMMP growers into one body.
I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in, and you go ahead with the testimony you need to provide, but really, the only things on the table now are the dash 17, 18, 19, and 20. So the idea of consolidating into one entity, that's correct, right, is not one of the
things. Okay, well, I've submitted my comments. Yeah. You can read all that.
Sure, that's great.
I'll just continue on here. What are all of you industry growers afraid of with your multi-million dollar out-of-state funded grow sites? Now that you have more than your piece of the pie that the medical grower created, you want it all. Medical dispensaries want our craft-grown cannabis. You want it all. Who else is going to provide them with the quality and variety that patients need? This is the only way to discourage diversion and keep our unique Oregon cannabis within our state. Dash 20, the emergency issue needs to be addressed now. Many growers in rural Oregon do not have physical addresses. Whose fault is this? Not the grower, the registering entity either has to accept GPS coordinates or legal parcel descriptions. That is enough to collect property taxes. It should be good enough to register a grow site. Finally, I do not support the combining of the OMMP into the OLC at all. It is my opinion that we who are remaining in the medical marijuana program as medical growers should remain within the Oregon Cannabis Commission within the Oregon Health Authority and be recognized as being protected under the statement in Measure 91 that said, do not offend, amend, or affect in any way the function, duties, and powers of the Oregon Health Authority under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. This was an interesting exercise at a look at what the combination of the OMMP under the OLCC would look like, but not one that is truly looking out for the interests of the medical patient or grower that this whole industry is overrunning.
Thank you, Ms. Bursting. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Mason Walker, and I have some prepared statements. I'm not sure if I can get through them in 2 minutes, but I'll read quickly.
Okay. You can submit them afterwards.
Okay, thank you. As I mentioned, my name is Mason Walker. I'm owner and CEO of East Fork Cultivars. We're a Clean Green Certified Tier 2 OLCC licensed farm located just outside of Cave Junction, Lower Rep Wilson, in Josephine County. We are 100% locally owned and funded company that counts 8 full-time year-round employees and supports dozens of well-paid seasonal workers. I'm here to voice my concern with Amendment 17 to 2198-17 amendments, similar to the last panel, so I'll be brief on that. They voiced most of my concerns. I wanted to give a little bit more context. To start and grow our small business, my partners and I have tapped loans from friends, maxed out our home equity, and emptied our bank accounts. No wealthy silent partners, no Canadian venture capital, just 5 Oregonians pouring their heart into building an ethical, compliant, and sustainable business. Our product is low in THC and high in CBD and focuses on helping people with a range of maladies, including symptoms of MS, Parkinson's, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, and chronic pain. When Measure 91 was voted into law, we decided to apply for a recreational cannabis license so we could provide access to diverse strains of sustainably grown cannabis for all Oregonians that need it. We will be growing 37 varieties of CBD-rich cannabis this season, of which we will publish detailed lab results and make available through processor partners in over a dozen consumable forms, from tinctures to edibles to topicals to vaporizer pens. Over the last year, the state legislature and the OLCC has worked really hard to regulate recreational cannabis. It's been a bit dizzying, but we've embraced this ongoing regulatory burden because we recognize that the rules continue to level the playing field and serve to give us some certainty so we can invest in better equipment, pay our employees a living wage, and ensure a safe and responsible industry. I'm going to skip forward a little bit to my conclusion here. We'd love to help find a balance that provides access to medical cannabis, but allows, but allowing medical growers that haven't faced our level of regulation and compliance to flood the market would likely crush our business. I'll just ask you to reconsider the amendments 17.
So that's the 20-pound. You're concerned about the 20-pound limit.
Correct. There's an oversupply already in the market, in my opinion. And we welcome competition, but under the same regulatory and compliance framework that we've had to go through to get to this point.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Taylor, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Anthony Taylor with Compassionate Oregon. To speak to the Dash 17s, as patient advocate, we do struggle with the burden that gets placed on patients time and time again. It's almost like Lin Chi, death by a thousand cuts. In the beginning, it was raising the registration, the application fee, and then it was followed by plant limits and an untenable patient grow site registration fees versus single grow site registration fees. We've seen reporting, and we've seen all this stuff go against patients. And in 17, we see this also, but I don't want to create any more confusion like what happened last week. I will say that I think that it's good that the Dash 17s address the need for 12 plants at a residence with 2 patients. I think that the continued limiting of people after a certain date having access to the adult use market is problematic. I think it doesn't allow for, you know, OMM, it doesn't provide much incentive for OMMP growers that want to come into the program and take care of patients and recoup some of their costs. I think the metric deadlines that were offered in the 9/14s should be readopted. I think that the scope of work for patients and bringing them into metric is going to be bigger than what's anticipated. And finally, I'd like to touch on the Dash 20s. The Dash 20s are very important right now because of the policy and the fears of the feds coming in and looking at things and finding places where we could make improvements. The OHA has decided that they're going to go with the letter of the law on addresses, and they're not going to allow GPS, you know, tax ID numbers and that sort of thing. So we're hoping that the committee can recognize the urgency of this for patients. We register about 175 right. patients
Thank
every day
so
in the
much.
State, and this change will allow those patients not to suffer
okay,
any
I'm
problems.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to stop. Thank you so much. If you have any items that you want to submit for the record, that'd be great. Mr. Sweet, do you want to make any comments quickly? So this panel, thank you for being here. We have one more presenter. We have Mr. Kramer, if you'd like to make your closing comments, and then we will, a few minutes behind schedule, close out the committee. Mr. Sweet, go ahead, and then Mr. Kramer will welcome your closing remarks.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jesse Sweet. I'm with the OLCC. I'd like to thank the committee for their patience tonight. I will be very brief in my remarks, which will be limited solely to a technical issue with Section 15 of the Dash 17 amendments. What this section does is it states that any evidence of a violation of OMMP statutes, which is discovered by an OLCC inspector in the course of investigating a grow site of more than 12 plants, is not admissible in an administrative hearing unless it is a violation for which CTS, the cannabis tracking system, was designed to track. So what we have here is a situation where the legislature has adopted statutes governing OMMP growers. These statutes apply uniformly to all growers. However, the admissibility of evidence which shows violation of these statutes is contingent on the agency which is performing the inspection and also contingent on where that grow site is located. For example, an OLCC inspector who is inspecting a primary residence that houses an OMMP grow is going to be limited by this statute. But if that same grow is inspected by an OMMP employee, they will not be limited by the statute. Likewise, if that grow is located in an outbuilding, the statute does not apply. However, if it is located in a basement of a residence, it would apply. So this creates a pretty confusing situation for the agencies, and I would suggest for growers as well. And it may be simpler to treat these businesses, which are located in residences, identically to the way that businesses such as in-home daycares or in-home catering kitchens are treated. In those cases, the regulatory agencies have authority to inspect, and any violation would be admissible.
That's a good point.
Thank you,
and I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, that's not a bad
Thanks
point.
Very much. All right. Does anyone have questions for OLCC right now? Thanks. All right. Mr. Kramer, did we have any questions over here? All right, thanks. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Pete Kramer. I'm a concerned citizen. I'm a patient. The cannabis should be under one thing, under the cannabis. The OLCC is alcohol. You use alcohol to clean things out or be in big trouble. Cannabis is medicine. Thank you for all you're doing in that. And remember, the patients are the people that are suffering in many different ways.
Thank you. Thanks for your comments, Mr. Kramer. Really appreciate it. All right. We had a good, productive meeting tonight. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2198. We look forward to seeing some of you folks back next week. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thanks. You folks back next week. And with that, we'll adjourn.